Got my Bible with me this week. Last week, as we were wrapping up the announcements, and I was looking in my case to get my notes and my Bible to ready to come up to give the sermon, I found my notes, and I looked and looked and looked and looked, and I couldn't find my Bible because it wasn't there. But over the years, I've probably forgotten just about everything that I can forget. In coming to services, I've left at home my suit coat, my briefcase, not all on the same Sabbath usually, but I've left my Bible at home. I've left my anointing oil at home. So far as I know, I've never left my wife at home. But I'm kind of finishing up my list here of things that I can forget. Not to say that I couldn't double back or maybe even have a combined list of things that I could forget in the future, but maybe I've got that somewhat out of my system for now. It also has been troubling me all week that I made another mistake last Sabbath. I misstated something that I hope didn't cause any terrible level of confusion. I made a point in my sermon that I was speaking to you on December the 12th, and that was exactly 2 months since we had observed together the last great day. In case any of you went home and checked your calendars, you would have noted that that was incorrect. December the 5th, a week before that, would have been 2 months since we observed the last great day. Now, I may have made any number of other mistakes during the message, but that's one that I remembered. It had bothered me all week long that there I was making a big deal. And I don't think it changed the point that I was trying to make, but I don't want to lead you astray in any way. So at least we can maybe make that correction and set that straight. But, you know, people make mistakes, and that's been happening ever since the first people. In fact, if we look back and consider it, there are a lot of things about people and about basic human nature that have remained the same from the very beginning. People want the same things, really, out of life. They want a good life. They want to enjoy themselves. They want to find pleasure. They want to find satisfaction. They want to have the opportunity for the kind of life that they would like to develop or to establish for themselves. But there's something else about human nature that hasn't changed either, about people that hasn't changed, and that is they want the freedom to figure it all out for themselves. They want to do it their own way. In fact, they resent being told what to do or what not to do. Let's go back again to the very beginning and take a look at what happened in the case of Eve, where she made some decisions based on what she wanted out of life. And one thing I'd like for us to note is that, again, this is not different from what people seek to do in their lives today. Instead of going through the whole story that we're very familiar with, we'll just drop down to verse 6 in Genesis, the third chapter. It says that when Eve saw that the tree, now this is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree, only tree in the garden that God told them that they should not eat from, when the woman saw that that tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took the fruit and she ate it. Eve saw that that choice would, in her mind, satisfy her and give her what she wanted from life. She would have the physical pleasure, she would have the satisfaction, and she felt that she would then be able to find the wisdom that she would need to live a meaningful and successful life. It's something that she felt would make her wise. The word wise that's used here is from a Hebrew word that has a number of different synonyms, which we'll briefly consider. The word wise means to be prudent. Now, prudent is not a word that we use a lot anymore. In fact, it used to be a fairly popular name for little girls, named Prudence. It was a name that a couple centuries ago, it was not uncommon. But to be prudent means to make careful and thoughtful decisions. And generally, prudence means not only to make a careful decision, but with a consideration of the future. For example, people might talk about making a prudent investment. Or just living prudently means to think about the future, not just about the immediate. To be wise also means to be circumspect. Now, to be circumspect means to be extremely cautious or wary in an effort to avoid making a mistake. One who is circumspect might move very slowly and deliberately in order to avoid making a mistake. To be wise includes having understanding. Understanding, of course, means to grasp or to assimilate, to judge information, to put it in context so that you can judge a situation or judge a decision. To be wise also implies being prosperous, to be successful, to be thriving, even to be wealthy. This is what Eve was looking for in her life. This is what she wanted to accomplish or to experience. Isn't that what we want? Don't we want to be prudent and circumspect, to have understanding, and to prosper in our lives? You see, Eve wanted the same things in her life that we want in our lives. But again, as I mentioned, she also had a sense of independence, which was very important to her. And the serpent was there to encourage her thinking. She already had that independent sense. We are created to be independent beings. But the serpent was there to kind of edge her on toward making decisions for herself. And he deceived and convinced her that there was an easier way than what she'd been told so far. He convinced her that she did not need God to tell her what to do, that she could accomplish this, she could take of this fruit and she would be wise, as well as satisfying other parts of her life. She thought she was choosing personal independence because God wasn't going to tell her what to do, but in fact, she was choosing to become a slave to the serpent, a slave to Satan. Now, what she ate probably was just a piece of fruit. It probably was nothing magical. There probably was nothing in that fruit that necessarily changed her mind or her attitude directly, but it indicated the choice that she was making. She chose a different life. And mankind has followed in that footstep, and for primarily the same reasons ever since. Every generation from the very beginning, people have had those inclinations. Now let's contrast that with what we can read in Proverbs, the first chapter. Between Genesis 3 and Proverbs 1, a lot has happened. A couple or 3,000 years have passed. A lot of history. There's been a great deal of pain, a great deal of suffering, a great deal of development of human society. Even the nation of Israel, as Solomon here, who provided this book for us, is the second king over the united nation of Israel. Sometime in the late 900s B.C., when Solomon began to rule. In chapter 1, verse 1 of Proverbs, we'll read the introduction to the chapter, or to the book. It says, "These are the Proverbs of Solomon, David's son, king of Israel. The purpose of these Proverbs, I'm reading from the New Living Translation because I think it has very direct and helpful language, the way it phrases these things. The purpose of these proverbs is to teach people wisdom and discipline, and to help them understand wise sayings. Through these proverbs, people will receive instruction in discipline, good conduct, and doing what is right, just, and fair. These proverbs will make the simple-minded clever, and they will give knowledge and purpose to young people. Solomon had in mind a young audience, and very likely even his own children were the primary ones to benefit from this book in his mind. I don't think that he realized he was writing scripture. But he intended to teach some important lessons to those young people that he felt he would be able to influence. And again, most likely, most importantly to him, his own children. The principles that are given here, of course, are meaningful not just to young people, but to all of us. They apply to everyone to help us to learn wisdom and discipline, to learn to do what is right and just and fair, and to strengthen the simple-minded. To be simple-minded, the Hebrew word there used there means to be foolish, silly, or naive. To be foolish, silly, or naive. The Hebrew word translated wisdom is a different one than what we saw in Genesis 3. In this case, the word that's used here means the ability to live skillfully. I've mentioned that definition to you often in the past. Wisdom means to live skillfully, to know how to live. You see, Solomon promises that these proverbs provide what Eve was looking for, the wisdom that she thought she would be able to find for herself. The title I've given to the sermon this afternoon is Making the Simple Wise, which is what Solomon suggests is the primary purpose for this book that he's put together. Now, remember that Solomon collected wisdom. Maybe you collect coins. Maybe you collect stamps. Maybe you collect Star Wars action figures. It seems like I've tended to collect paper. I don't intend to, but my office and my life seem to be flooded with endless reams of paper. Paper that I have that words on them that I have to read and remember and file so I can find it again. I have a computer that helps me gather the information into electronic files, but eventually it has to be printed out again, and there's that paper. But you see, Solomon collected wisdom. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 4. How is it that Solomon was able to write this book? And it's called in the Hebrew Bible the Book of Wisdom. How is it that he was able to put this book together? 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 29 is where we're going to start reading. Prior to this, earlier in this chapter, it lists describes the wealth that Solomon enjoyed. Now, I'm sorry, we're in 1 Kings chapter 4. See, there I go, misleading you again. 1 Kings chapter 4. Go back a few verses and from where we're going to begin reading. You see that Solomon had incredible wealth that he had gathered and amassed to himself, and you'll read elsewhere that it was pretty much on the backs of the people of Israel through the high taxes that he required of them. But he had put together a huge and prosperous life, and he had a very exorbitant lifestyle. But notice, beginning in verse 29, that God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart like the sand of the seashore. Now remember that when Solomon first became king, God told him that he could ask for whatever he wanted and God would give it to him. It says in the account in Chronicles that Solomon asked for wisdom, but it's described a little differently here in First Kings, where it says that he asked for an understanding heart. The word understanding heart, or the phrase, could be translated a listening heart. What Solomon asked for was an approach to life that had to do with the way he felt, the way he responded, the way he learned and listened. He asked for a listening heart, because Solomon at this young point in his opportunity to be king realized that he would need to be able to perceive and understand the matters that were brought before him so that he could properly judge. So Solomon asked indeed for wisdom, but it's described here in this account as being, as again in verse 29, an exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart. This description helps us to understand something very basic about wisdom, the foundation of wisdom. Wisdom is built on sensitivity, perception, and a willingness to listen. That's the foundation of wisdom. Now, we know that wisdom begins with fearing God. We'll get to that in a minute. But the foundation for that quality of wisdom is a kind of an approach to life that is really built around service. It's a matter of perception and sensitivity and a willingness to learn. Now, obviously, Eve's approach was unsuccessful. She was seeking to be wise, but she wound up behaving in a way that was silly and foolish and naive, very simple-minded. On her own, she did not have the intelligence and the understanding that was necessary to succeed in life the way that she desired to. So her choice led to disaster. The book of Proverbs is offered as a contrast. It's directed specifically to youth, but it is applicable to all. How is it that a young person or an older person can have and develop good judgment, knowledge, and discretion? How can we have the wisdom that we all would desire to have so that we can order our lives effectively? That's what we're talking about this afternoon as we consider this purpose of the book of Proverbs, making the simple wise. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10, and consider here the starting point. I mentioned that the heart must be set correctly, be one that is understanding, sensitive, willing to learn and to listen. That's a foundation, or part of the foundation, for wisdom. But we also find in chapter 9, verse 10, another part of this foundation that makes wisdom possible. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. We read that the fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The first thing a simple person needs to learn is to fear God. It is the starting point to properly respect and honor, to love God, to be in awe of Him, and to learn from Him, to gather or to accept the understanding and the teaching that he has. When we acknowledge that, then we can begin to make progress, growing from being simple-minded to having wisdom. If we go back in Proverbs to chapter 1, we'll get a little bit of an overview of why being simple or simple-minded, as it's described here in this book, is so dangerous. Chapter 1 in Proverbs, verse 32, says that the turning away of the simple will slay them. You see, the simple-minded are headed on a path of destruction. That's the conclusion of this portion of Scripture. Let's back up a few verses and read what it says. How is it that the simple-minded are on their path to destruction? Let's go back and look what it says a little earlier, beginning in verse 24. Proverbs 1, verse 24. It's personifying wisdom as you look into this section. It's as if wisdom is speaking to the young people or to the audience here. It says, because I've called and you refused, I've stretched out my hand and no one regarded. Because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my rebuke. The point here is that wisdom has been offered, but it has been rejected. And there will be consequences. It will lead to difficulty. Verse 26, I also, this again is if wisdom were speaking, I also will laugh at your calamity. I'll mock you when your terror comes. When your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. It's as if wisdom is standing back and kind of arms folded and says, told you so. Because you rejected what you had the opportunity to learn, this is going to be the result. And in a sense, although I don't think God really scorns and mocks at people, it's as if, again, wisdom is saying, well, you know, you should have known better. You had the chance. Verse 28, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They'll seek me diligently, but they won't find me because they hated knowledge and they did not choose the fear of the eternal. They would have none of my counsel and despised my every rebuke. There are times, and we maybe should pause to consider our own situation, when we recognize that, you know, God has been giving us the opportunity to learn. And if we do learn from those situations and learn from him, then we're on the right path. But if not, well, there's going to come an I told you so moment. They would have none of my counsel, despise my rebuke. Verse 31, therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their own way. They'll be filled to the full with their own fancies. You want it, you got it. To those who reject the opportunity to receive wisdom, to receive knowledge from God. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. Proverbs speaks of those who are simple or are simple-minded. It seems that in this book, the description is of those who choose to remain silly, foolish, and naive. In a way, there's nothing wrong with being simple because we all start that way. We all start out early in life or at whatever point in life when we come to it, we realize that we're naive, we haven't learned certain basics yet, and that we need to grow up. And we all begin at that point. The difference between the simple and the wise is that those who become wise have learned to fear God and to follow the instruction of wisdom. So the implication here, or the reminder, is that we can become wise if we also seek to have that understanding heart. Let's look at a few more Proverbs, and we'll see the difference between the wise and the simple-minded. There are some very stark contrasting differences, and we can choose which way we are going to continue to conduct ourselves. Look at chapter 22, verse 3. Proverbs 22, verse 3. Here's a significant difference between one who has chosen to remain simple and one who has chosen wisdom. Proverbs 22, verse 3 says that a prudent man, and being prudent is one of the synonyms for wisdom, or it's a characteristic of wisdom, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. You see, a person who's exercising some wisdom in life can use foresight, can anticipate the result that might come from certain decisions. Remember, I said that part of the definition of prudence was that it has this forward-looking aspect to it. To be prudent means to be able to look ahead and to recognize that poor decisions will lead to unpleasant consequences. The simple, as described here, are not necessarily unable or incapable of making better decisions, but they haven't learned to fear God. They haven't learned to be sensitive to and to learn from their experiences. Like Eve, they may be deceived. Or maybe they're just simply stubborn, unwilling to yield to God's instructions. But the person with wisdom will look ahead. The person who is simple-minded will just stumble along from one punishment to the next, not really even putting together the consequences and realizing what's happening. Chapter 27, verse 12, pretty much says the same thing. Proverbs 27, verse 12, says that a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. Now again, this is speaking of being able to look ahead and anticipate the result. The New Testament puts it that we reap what we sow, says in the book of Galatians. And the person of prudence and thoughtfulness will look ahead and say, you know, I can see how this is not going to end well. This is going to go a different direction than I really want in my life. And so to hide yourself means to avoid those consequences. And you avoid them by making the decision to honor God and to obey Him. And again, it says the simple pass on and are punished. They stumble into the consequences that they could have avoided, because they're oblivious. They're not paying attention. They're not looking ahead. That's a significant difference between one who is wise and one who is simple-minded, but it's not all that complicated to repair. It's a matter of which direction a person chooses to take. Let's look at another difference between a wise person and a simple-minded person. We'll see, again, not only the difference, but we can see how it is you can avoid the problems that simple-minded people bring upon themselves. Proverbs 19:25. Proverbs 19, verse 25. This has to do with how we learn and what it takes for us to learn. Proverbs 19:25 says, "Strike a scoffer, and the simple will become wary. But rebuke one who has understanding, and he will discern knowledge." You see, a wise person learns more easily than one who is simple-minded. A simple-minded person basically has to get slapped around to learn much. A simple-minded person will learn, become wary, not wanting to get slapped around anymore. I say slapped around, I'm talking about the natural consequences that we considered just a moment ago. That this is the result of making poor decisions. And if we find ourselves struggling and hurting and feel a bit beat up, then we may become wary. Now, it doesn't say that the person gets any smarter. It just says that he becomes wary. You know, kind of flinches a bit more. The real solution, of course, is to not just be wary, but to actually make some changes. And then it goes on to say that if one who has understanding is corrected, uses the word rebuke. Rebuke is a verbal correction or discipline, a sharp verbal correction or statement. And people don't like to be rebuked. People kind of bristle at being rebuked. But one who has discernment and understanding will get it and will learn much more easily. Life is easier. I'll put it the other way. Life is more difficult for the simple-minded. So we see then another difference. And this a way for us to learn from that is to recognize what we can learn, how we can learn, and not require life to become really difficult before we're willing to accept or learn a lesson. Something else about the simple-minded is that being simple-minded becomes a lifestyle. Look at chapter 14, verse 18. Proverbs 14, verse 18. It becomes a pattern in a person's life. And it's a pattern that can be broken. But you see often in some people's lives, they do just one thing after another. It's just one difficulty, one problem, one hassle, one avoidable consequence after another kind of compounds in their life. Proverbs 14, verse 18 says that the simple inherit folly. You know, the simple just follow along that pattern time after time again. It's as if almost it's almost genetic. They inherit the folly or the consequence. The New Living Translation puts it this way: the simpleton is clothed with folly. Now, in Scripture, clothing represents a person's life and what they are. You know, white clothing represents righteousness. And we're told by Peter to be clothed with humility, to cover ourselves with. So clothing in this sense represents a person's character. And simple-minded people, the proverb warns, is one who just almost inherently, continually repeats the same foolish patterns. Now, those foolish patterns can be broken, but it requires a decision and thoughtfulness and a change in direction in a person's life. If you look at the Proverbs, you see that Solomon is giving us the opportunity for the simple to become wise. For those who perhaps have made some mistakes and have some issues in life, to recognize what it takes to turn it around. There's a pattern there, but it can be broken. It's broken by those who seek, again, as we've put it before, that understanding heart. Let's look at another contrast between one who is simple-minded and one who has this wisdom that Solomon is teaching. A simple-minded person is gullible. Chapter 14, still, verse 15. Chapter 14, verse 15 in Proverbs says that the simple believes every word. But the prudent, again, those who exercise some thoughtfulness and look ahead and apply wisdom to their situation, a skill at living to their situation, well, they will consider before they fall for something else. A prudent person, a person who exercising this wisdom, is thoughtful and careful about what he accepts and what he decides. See, this is the simple pitfall that Eve found herself in. Satan or the serpent seemed to offer her a shortcut to what she wanted, an easier path to get to what she wanted from life. She wanted pleasure, she wanted satisfaction, and she wanted to be a wise person. But God seemed to be holding her back from that. At least that was what the serpent convinced Eve, what he convinced her to think. And she was gullible enough to accept it. She fell into the trap. One who was prudent, one who was thoughtful, one who was careful, one who weighs decisions before jumping into something can avoid that, will order his steps or go in a direction that's safer and that is allows for a good outcome. And we've been in the book of Proverbs. Let's break out of the Proverbs and go back to a couple of New Testament examples. Let's look at Romans chapter 16. This is something that Paul wrote as he was beginning to conclude here his letter to the church at Rome. Chapter 16 in the book of Romans. In verses 17 and 18, he's warning the church about people who introduce division in the church. A very different kind of a setting, but he'll come here, we'll see in a moment, to some similar or some familiar points that he wants to make. He says to make note of, to be aware of those who cause division and offense that are contrary to the doctrine that you've learned, and avoid them. In the New Testament setting, we find often that there are people who come along with a different teaching, a false teaching, and confuse members and draw them astray. And it's a frustrating thing to observe. But why is it? How is it that happens? Well, Paul is warning them about something here that we just saw. He says, here's how they do it. They're not serving God, but they're serving themselves with their smooth words and flattering speech. They're just out to deceive the simple. They're out to deceive those that they can convince of this different twist or this different approach or this different teaching, this different doctrine that they are introducing. They are effective in pulling aside or causing confusion to those who are simple. The word simple that's used here, that's in the Greek language, is translated simple, is from a word that means to be unsuspecting. You know, they're just, again, they're gullible. They're willing to receive everything that is being told to them. It may, for some reason or in some way, appeal to them. And so they're drawn into it. Again, consider Eve. She was not suspicious of the serpent. Now, we've often kind of joked about the fact that if some snake talks to me, that's the first thing I'm going to do is be suspicious. But the serpent somehow appealed to her, and she was willing to receive it because, frankly, that's what she wanted to hear. She wanted to hear that there was something easier, that there was another way. The gullible person is taken in by the convincing, deceptive arguments or words that a person may offer and somehow try to use to confuse others. So it's a matter of not being of being thoughtful and not being easily drawn in another direction. Sometimes our own thoughts can trick us into, and we can convince ourselves. And we can be gullible of our own, giving into our own justification or temptations. But let's consider a much more positive example in Matthew, the fourth chapter. This is, a familiar portion of Scripture beginning in verse 1, where Satan tried this same approach with Jesus. When he tempted Jesus, he was trying to convince him that there was an easier way. But Jesus was not simple. Jesus was not naive. He wasn't gullible. We won't read down through the whole section, but you're familiar with what happened. Satan was allowed to directly and specifically tempt Jesus Christ. It's worthwhile for us to consider what it was he tried to do, because he uses the same tactics today. as he did with Jesus, he appeals to our physical needs. He appeals to us to make us doubt whether God is really going to care for us and take or provide for us as we had come to trust him to do. So that was the first attack he made on Jesus Christ, was to try to take advantage of the fact that he was in physical need at the moment and make him doubt whether God was really going to provide for him. Satan works on us in a similar way, doesn't he? We often can look at our situation and wonder, is God really providing for me? I have a genuine need in my life. And it seems to be going asking, is God really going to provide? He also appeals, Satan appeals to our natural doubt about whether God will care for us, whether God will intervene for us. And so he tried to tempt Jesus into jumping off of this top, off of this building, to test God, to see if God would really take care of him. And so we have moments in our lives when we, like Israel sometimes, can look back on our situation and we begin to wonder, is God going to take care of me in my time of serious personal need? Is he really going to catch me? Is he really going to make sure that I'm safe? Again, Jesus didn't fall for that one either. He realized that it's not right to doubt God or to tempt him, because he does care for those who are in need, so we don't have to doubt him in that way. And then he also, finally, in the third test, Satan tried to appeal to Jesus for finding a shortcut to wealth and success. If you just worship me, then you don't have to go through this whole sacrifice thing. I'll give you blessings. I'll provide special things for you, and I'll give you the kingdoms of the earth. Now, Satan knew that that's what was going to be the inheritance that Jesus would receive, and so he offered him an easier way to do it. Do it my way, and it's much, much easier. None of this crucifixion stuff. We'll just cut straight to the reward. But again, on every level, as Satan offers those kinds of things in this world today, we need to be on guard, as Jesus was, to recognize that there is no shortcut. There is no better way. That what God is dealing with us and doing with us in our lives is the way that it needs to be. And we can't look for a simpler solution, a more satisfying thing now. We need to put our trust in God. See, those who are simple will be turned away by the temptations that Satan offers, just as Eve was seemingly quickly turned. Jesus had the strength, the understanding, the wisdom to resist and to know better than what Satan was offering. So Jesus wasn't gullible. Jesus didn't just fall for the seeming and the twisted logic that Satan was using in approaching him. So we also then, to exercise wisdom, need to be certainly aware, be thoughtful, and not be drawn quickly into what seems to be an easier solution. Let's look at one more contrast back in the book of Proverbs. A simple person, we'll go turn to Proverbs 9, verse 9. A simple person rejects instruction. A simple person thinks he knows what he needs to know and rejects instruction or commands, for that matter. There's an independence. There's a stubbornness of heart rather than a listening heart. And a person who is simple-minded will turn away from the instruction that is offered that can be very helpful. Proverbs 9, verse 9 says, "Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a man, and he will increase in learning." A wise person, one who is not simple-minded, actually seeks instruction, seeks a way or knowledge and understanding of what can be changed, what can be made better, what needs to be done. One who is simple-minded will think that they have the answers and they don't need any further instruction. Chapter 4, verse 13. Chapter 4, verse 13. This is said, you know, almost with a pleading tone to it, that I can just see a parent approaching someone, a young person in their family and one of their children, with this kind of a request of them, or just to try to convince them to please understand. Chapter 4, verse 13, "Take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life." There's something about us that just, again, we as we mentioned earlier, that by nature we don't like to be told that we're wrong, or told how to do something better, or told where something needs to be changed. We'd rather think of ourselves as being someone who has that wisdom and knowledge. And so we by nature, and again, we're always fighting our nature, whether we're young or whether we're much older, we're always fighting our nature to not be resistant to. Remember what Solomon received: an understanding heart, a listening heart. It's a heart of wisdom, rather than continuing or insisting on being one who is simple-minded. Wisdom is a very big subject, and we're talking about just a very simple contrast between wisdom and being simple-minded. But you know, there are different kinds of wisdom. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Paul warns of a kind of wisdom that we see all around us. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and we see it increasingly in our society, where people are using their own reasoning to justify patterns of life or lifestyle choices that we know are in direct violation of God's instruction. But being simple-minded, people are often not willing to hear what God instructs. In 1 Corinthians 2, let's begin in verse 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 1 says, "And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was in weakness and fear and in trembling, and my speech and my preaching were not persuasive words of human wisdom." Paul is kind of acknowledging here that his approach, his style, is not, frankly, all that impressive on the world's standards. By their standards, it's not, eloquent to the point where people are going to be just drawn into it and willing to receive it. It wasn't a persuasive kind of human wisdom, but it says in demonstration of the spirit of power. In other words, it is wisdom that is of God. Verse 6, "We speak wisdom among those who are mature, but not the wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing." One of the most frustrating things right now is to watch the great minds of our leaders at work. Some of their reasoning, some of the way that the conclusions they come to, the lifestyles that they support. This is the wisdom of this age from the rulers who are coming to nothing. we, in the meantime, are respectful of those that God has allowed to be over us, and we're not out to become part of that political system, but we certainly can recognize where there is wisdom and where there is a simple mind. We speak, verse 7, the wisdom of God in a mystery. The wisdom of God is something that's hidden from people in general. They're not able to grasp it and understand it. The hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory, for the promises that are yet to come to us. There's wisdom and there's wisdom. The wisdom of this world, the reasoning of the human mind, comes off as or appears to be, many people's opinions, words of wisdom, but they're actually empty words, simple-minded words that will only add to the confusion of this age that we live in. Colossians chapter 2. Colossians, the second chapter. This describes the wisdom that we come to understand and appreciate. I'm going to read this in the New Revised Standard. Colossians chapter 2, verse 1. Paul writes, I want you to know how much I am struggling for you and for those in Laodicea and for all those who have not seen me face to face. This was, Paul is trying to convince him to emphasize his effort to serve the churches. Verse 2, I want their hearts, that of their congregation, to be encouraged and united in love, so that, and here's what we want to get to, so that, the reason that we should be, he wants us to be encouraged and united, is so that we may have all the riches of assured understanding and have the knowledge of God's mystery, which is Christ himself, or revealed through Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. The truth of God's message, and specifically the message about Jesus Christ and the plan being accomplished through him, is where the hidden treasure of wisdom is stored. It's the kind of wisdom that we seek, and it begins with that fear of God and a desire to have God's instruction, to have an understanding heart willing to receive. Frankly, that's the only way to overcome being simple-minded. A simple-minded person basically relies on himself, on his own resources, on whatever he can produce or understand of and by himself. Wisdom is something that we must receive from God, and it's hidden in the truth and the gospel message that he's given to us. It's not impressive to the world. It's not words that it's going to shake people to their foundations because they're not open to it. But they're words that enlighten our lives and give us the strength of mind instead of a simple mind. Turn back to Romans 16. Look what Paul says here. Romans chapter 16. We read earlier verses 17 and 18. Let's continue into verse 19. Romans chapter 16, verse 19. He says, for your obedience has become known to all, therefore I'm glad on your behalf. But he says, I want you to be wise in what is good and simple concerning evil. Paul urges us to be skilled at what is right, but to be simple concerning evil. Now, he uses the word simple here. It's a little different use of the word than we found back in the Proverbs. This is from the Greek language. The word simple here does not mean ignorant. It does not mean feeble-minded. In this case, the Greek word translated simple means harmless or innocent. In other words, to be innocent of living in a way that is evil. To be innocent of disobedience. Paul urges us to be expert, to be skilled, to have wisdom in living in the way that is right. But to be harmless or innocent of the lifestyle of evil that we see all around us. So you might ask yourself, what is your area of expertise? What do you know best about life? Look at one of the condemnations of the nation of Israel in Jeremiah, the fourth chapter. Jeremiah 4. Verse 22. Jeremiah 4, verse 22. The prophet writes the words of God. He says, "My people are foolish. They have not known me. They are silly children." Again, simple-minded. Silly, naive, foolish. They're foolish. They have not known me. They're silly children. They have no understanding. Notice it says they're wise to do evil, but to do good, they have no knowledge. If there's a caption for a picture of the world today, that might be it. Mankind is wise to do evil, but to do good, they have no knowledge. What kind of wisdom do you have? What wisdom is in your wallet? What are you best at? Is the knowledge of what is good and right and pleasing to God the aspect of life in which we are skilled, in which we exercise careful judgment, prudence, understanding, circumspect in our actions? Or are we pretty much skilled in what's going on around us in the world? Do we have knowledge of what is good and right and pleasing to God? There's quite a contrast, and a pretty easy one to draw, between the simple-minded and the wise. So let's conclude with one more thought that we can gain here from Scripture about wisdom and how we can learn it and apply it. We're going, again, outside of the book of Proverbs, but there's much in that particular book, as we've seen. But let's look at a couple of other passages here about to help us understand, again, how it is that the simple-minded can become wise. Psalm 19, verse 7. Psalm 19. Verse 7. Psalm 19, verse 7 says that the law of the eternal is perfect. Now, that means many different things. It means that it's flawless. There's nothing wrong with God's law. It is absolutely without any contradiction or problem or difficulty. It is flawless. It also means that God's law is complete and comprehensive. God's law is fully complete. There's nothing lacking from God's law. When God gave us instruction about how to live, he didn't overlook or forget something that we should have been taught. God's law is universal, it's complete, it's comprehensive, it's flawless. The testimony of the Lord is sure, it is absolute, it is certain, making wise the simple. The application of God's law is that step we can take when we fear God, when we seek an understanding, listening heart that's willing to receive instruction. Then we recognize that God's law is the way that we get there. It is the path, it is the mechanism by which the simple become wise. It's a decision we make every day, constantly, many times every day, to choose to live in a way that expresses skill, understanding, knowledge, wisdom, over a way that is simple-minded, foolish, and naive. One last passage we'll look at is in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15. I've mentioned that there are different kinds of wisdom in the world. You know, some people are good at running a business. They have a lot of business sense, a lot of wisdom in how to manage money or manage people or to manage a product to be successful. In fact, in Luke 16, Jesus speaks of the sons of this world. He says they're more shrewd than the children of light. In other words, there's a money smart approach to life that many have. And Jesus kind of basically acknowledges that there's some in this world who on that level are smarter than you or I might be. There's a different kind of wisdom that's applied there. There are all kinds of professions that require experience or specialized knowledge, careful judgment, discernment, skill. There are different ways of thinking and applying to life that could be defined or described as wisdom. Some people just simply have some good basic common sense, or we call it sometimes horse sense. You know, they can just look at something and they can help to deal with a matter or a relationship. But, you know, much of that common sense we see around us and the different kinds of wisdom that people have to be successful in their professions is just another way of human reasoning. And it can turn out to be a mix of good and bad. The kind of wisdom that we are seeking, the kind of wisdom that the simple-minded can have instead, is a different level of wisdom and applies in a different way in life. So in 2 Timothy 3:15, we find an important detail. He's talking to Timothy and how he's been taught the way of God by his mother and his grandmother from childhood. And he's being urged, verse 14, to continue in those things that he's learned. Verse 15, that you've known from childhood the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation. There's the wisdom that is important. There's wisdom in this world about how to make a living or how to succeed or how to invest your money or what, you know, how to proceed on that level. And that can be helpful in a very limited way. The wisdom that we seek, the wisdom that elevates a person from being simple-minded, is what Paul writes of here. The wisdom for salvation, the way to receive and to get to what we really want out of life. Eve made a simple-minded mistake, and it led to disaster. It was a mistake that mankind has followed ever since. We have that same sense of independence, and Satan appeals to it, and we keep falling. We, meaning mankind, keeps falling for that same line of reasoning over and over again. But we want to have what Eve set out to have. She wanted a meaningful, satisfying, enjoyable, and successful life. But she went about it the wrong way because she was simple-minded. The earlier in life that we learn this lesson, the better off we'll be. We can learn it later, and we all continue to learn the lesson, but we can begin to learn whenever we decide to. Only God can give us the wisdom that we want so that we can enjoy life and experience the results that we're looking for. It is only through God that we can have that wisdom. And only through God that we can have that ultimate wisdom which will lead to salvation. It is how the simple become wise.